Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Are you in control of the things you own, or do you struggle to organize your possessions, your time, and your priorities? The problem of clutter is common, even in an America struggling through the depths of recession. Identifying and then eliminating what we really don't need can be a daunting prospect, but my guest today is convinced that losing excessive stuff can make way for things in life that are far more valuable. Mary Carlomagno is founder of Order, a company that specializes in clutter control. Her new book is called Secrets of Simplicity, Learning to Live Better with Less. Mary, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
Is there a relationship between order and happiness?
Oh, absolutely. I think that order is the key. I think there was a quote by Pearl S. Buck that said, order is the place where beauty lays. And I think that's definitely true. When you have a clean slate and a blank canvas, if you will, you really can begin to create and thrive. And I think that's where everything begins, with a clean slate.
You describe yourself as a recovering shopaholic. Can you talk about what your life was like before you took control over that?
Absolutely. Several years ago, I was living a very high-paced career lifestyle in Manhattan, where shopping was not only something out of necessity, it had become my social outlet. It had become more than my hobby, something I did just about every day, whether I was purchasing something new to wear or surfing online for some new bargain or going to, you know, eBay or returning. I was constantly in stores. It was really taking up most of my time. And as I reviewed my American Express card statements at the end of each month, it was taking up most of my money as well.
Was it something that just you were doing, or were all your friends sort of engaging in the same kinds of behaviors?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because some of the friends that I was friendly with at that time were really just shopping friends. We went to sample sales together, and we planned trips to outlets and did all these kinds of things that were surrounded around shopping. And what I found was that many of my friends would encourage me to buy something rather than not to buy something. And that was a habit we had all gotten into, where we were just constantly using shopping as a way to socialize.
It's really interesting when you describe that, because it sounds like people who have to stop hanging out at bars with the people they were friends with then if they have a problem with substance abuse.
It's absolutely true. You know, you really have to define your friendships a bit by the experiences you have, certainly, and things in common. But if you find that you only have certain friends that you shop with and do nothing else with them, or, you know, your example of going to a bar and that's the only thing you do with them, I think that you look at those relationships a little bit differently and see if there isn't something else to make them a bit more well-rounded.
And I have to imagine that the tough thing about people who have a problem with shopping is the same problem as people who are compulsive overeaters. You can't really go cold turkey. You have to continue to make decisions every single day about what to buy and what not to buy.
Well, I think the key in my, you know, sort of tongue-in-cheek way of looking at shopaholic is that I'm a recovering shopaholic. So every day is a way to recover. It's not something that you are always going to kick, because if you have that impulsive behavior, it is something that's certainly going to tempt you. And we all can see from the consumer society that shopping is everywhere, whether it's online or, you know, the growth of superstores and retailers and outlets, and certainly even eBay and Craigslist to a smaller degree, can really keep you engaged in the shopping activity. So it's making the decision for yourself, and that comes from within, and that's really where Secrets of Simplicity takes off, is that it's starting to analyze your desires from within rather than taking an external stimulus to make you shop. In other words, a catalog comes in the mail and you say, I'm going to shop now. That's somebody else's idea. The search for within and what your desires and needs are is really what I base the book on.
Yeah, you recommend that people begin this process with a sacrifice, and you cite the Christian tradition of Lent. Can you talk about the value in that?
Yes, I think that what happens is when you do have these habits that you do every day, and I talk a lot about everyday habits, that they become so ingrained in your schedule and they become so much a part of your life that they go on and become things that you do without analysis. So just because you stop off at the coffee shop every day and get a $5 latte, do you really want that or need that? What is the motivation behind that? It's something you do every day, and there is a certain monotony that can take place, and the habits that become ingrained are everyday habits. So taking a break from an everyday habit often reconnects you with why you're doing it, do you need to do it, and puts a different kind of value on the activity or the item that you give up.
So how do you choose the thing that you're going to experiment with giving up? And I know that in a sort of previous project, you gave something up every single month and saw right. how that affected your life. But where do you go first?
For me, I kind of went with the January resolution of a wild New Year's Eve and giving up drinking for the month of January and seeing where that would take me. I think everybody will have a different vice they choose to go with. Right now, I think shopping is particularly resonating with a lot of people because we have expanded so much. Lao Tzu, and I quote him in the book, says sometimes we have to really expand to contract. So in other words, we really have to go and look at the habit that maybe we're abusing a little bit and choose that and see if we can really go without that. So for me, shopping represented that. And then I started diving deeper into different kinds of sacrifices. But some people don't have the shopping bug. Some people, you know, for example, coffee might be their vice, or taking taxis, or, you know, it could be really taking any form. I think you have to look at the item that's gone somewhat out of balance in your life.
Mary Carla Magno is my guest. She's a founder of the clutter control specialist company Order. Her new book is called Secrets of Simplicity, Learning to Live Better with Less. It's very interesting because you talk about this in the book. Very often in this country, we are fortunate and unfortunate enough to be overwhelmed by choice. If you decide that you want to buy a refrigerator or a sofa or a sweater, there might be 500 choices.
Exactly. And that really becomes the problem. It's sort of the abundance as your demon problem, in that you are constantly having decision making. You're constantly having to make a decision about which cell phone to use. Will it be out of date by the time you start using it? The technology is moving so fast that you want to upgrade. So the idea of upgrading has become very prevalent in our society. And there are just so many choices. I like to use an analogy from travel. Every time I go to Europe or a foreign country, especially in Europe, where I look for cereal, there seems to only be two kinds of cereal in places outside of the United States. You get granola or you get flakes.
You imagine what they think when they come to a grocery store here, and there's 500.
There's 500 cereals, and then there's the organic aisle. So you have a whole other range of choices there as well. So we're constantly having to make these decisions. And because there's so much abundance, we feel we have to make a decision.
That's so interesting. So we feel like just choosing one, that's a little victory, as opposed to choosing maybe not to buy it at all.
Exactly right. Because I think it would be, you'd be hard pressed right now to find a friend or a relative or someone without a cell phone.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think I know anybody right now without a cell phone. And then, of course, the digital camera. You know, that's become a necessity. And then the digital video camera. And certainly the evolution of all of the iPod and the digital music, and how did you live without DVR? You had to actually watch the program and not rewind. We use that rewind function constantly.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do if I couldn't pause the TV, because I've gotten so accustomed to that.
Everybody pauses the TV, so it's, you know, that's a good example of how fast life is moving, is that we can't even sit and settle to watch, you know, the Food Network and make sure we have that recipe down.
Can you talk about the questions that you like to ask yourself before you upgrade to a new piece of technology?
I like to find out exactly how much I'm going to use it. I'm not an extremely technological person, so some of the functions that are offered are just not going to be used by me. I don't need that much. So just because it's offered doesn't mean you're going to use it. So I think it begins with you asking yourself, what is the purpose for this? And really asking yourself if what you have right now is adequate enough for your needs. Do you need to have 8x zoom on a camera? I probably don't, because if I can get 1x zoom and even get the people that I'm shooting into the picture, I have a small victory on my hands. So I think you have to ask yourself really what you're going to use it for, what your needs are, and what your capabilities to use the technology. I mean, that's like a huge thing, because the technology is so advanced, and for the everyday consumer or everyday person, I don't know that you need that much technology for something.
Yeah, and we have really set up a culture where the expectation is that you're sort of an idiot. You're a patsy if you don't want all that. I had to get a new phone not too long ago, and the guy in the store looked at the old one and said, "Well, this is a good starter phone." And I was so embarrassed of my old starter phone, which until that moment that it stopped working had been fine.
Oh, absolutely adequate. You know, the big screen TVs are also another good example. I mean, how big are they? And, you know, with the prices of tickets to going to sporting events, I think they might actually be a bargain. I mean, some of these TVs, you really feel like the game is in the living room. I mean, the people look lifelike. HD has done wonders for that. So I think that there is a certain line you can draw, which, you know, maybe some technology is a little bit too much.
You say that it's helpful to figure out what kind of shopper we are. Can you talk about the four different categories and what they say about our choices?
Well, you know, my brother is the perfect example because he's a returner. He likes to return things constantly. But there are four different kinds of people. Now, there's an idea that I put out there, and it's called hoarding. But I don't mean it in the sense of the people who really suffer from the obsessive-compulsive disease. I mean the person who goes to the Gap and finds the T-shirt and buys maybe eight of them instead of just buying one and using it, you know, to for its use and finishing it. It's actually worn out. You know, I can't remember the last time I wore something out. That doesn't seem to be something that happens in our society too much. There's the notion of a stalker, who, again, is not the clinical term for stalker. It's somebody who maybe sees a bicycle and wants to buy it and keeps going back and visiting it.
Oh, sure, and kind of obsessively thinks, what if I had this? Is it too much? Can I afford it?
Exactly right. So they keep going back and looking at it. So I know people who have done that as well. Then there's the what I call the crier buyer, who's the emotional buyer, who's the, I had a great day. I'm going to go buy a Prada handbag. Or, I had a terrible day, I'm going to go buy a Prada handbag. So there's that kind of way of looking at it. And then finally, there's an impulser who is very subject to a sale, subject to something put in front of them, subject to an advertisement, and will buy something on impulse rather than researching it and thinking it out, which is what I really advocate.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine in a mild form, just about all of us can identify with all four of those things. What are the signs that the choices that we're making about acquiring material goods are not healthy ones?
I always think that you start with your credit card statements and just look at where your money is spent, because that also indicates where your time is spent. And I think it's really important to look at that financially. Right now, especially because of what's happening in the world, is that you look at how much you've accumulated, and it's really a time to take inventory and take stock. So I think any time you can have a reality check is a good one, and I think that credit card spending is a really good indicator of that.
Yeah, it's really interesting to correlate spending money to spending time, because we don't necessarily think of those two things. We often think we're spending money to save time.
I think that it really indicates where you are spending your time. I mean, if you see that your Bloomingdale's is far outweighing anything else that you do, then there's a good indicator there as to that's where you are. That's where you've been spending your money and your time. I think it's a great correlation, and it's one that I find in my client work as well.
Mm-hmm. We should, before we take this break, just talk very, very briefly about the sort of clinical kind of hoarding that you mentioned and distinguish that. And maybe we can get into a little bit of detail after the break. But that's a problem where people really cannot let go of things.
They collect everything. And that, you know, it is an obsessive compulsive disorder. And it affects, I think, somewhere around 2% of the population. So it's not as common as cluttering. Mm-hmm. And hoarding is somebody who really cannot do anything else in their life. It's preventing them from doing a lot of things in their life, from getting out, from getting organized, certainly. But it can be a debilitating disease.
And people with that would need to obviously seek a professional, mental health professional.
Professional should help in that case.
Okay. Mary Carla Magno is my guest. She's a founder of the clutter control company Order. She's also the author of a new book called Secrets of Simplicity, Learning to Live Better with Less. We'll talk in a moment about getting rid of some of the things we don't need and how to figure out what it is we can let go of.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses beginning in January. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Mary Carla Magno. Her new book is called Secrets of Simplicity, Learning to Live Better with Less. If you want to join us, you can send an email to think@kera.org, or you can call 1-800-933-5372. So we've talked about the issue of acquiring more stuff than we need. I know a lot of people who could buy just about nothing over the next year and still have too much. Why do we find it so hard to let go of the things we already have?
Well, it's interesting because many people assign such emotion to inanimate objects. So you might be holding on to a dress that you wore on a first date with your now husband, and you can't quite get rid of it, even though it will never fit you again, because you're assigning the emotion to that piece.
It could still happen.
Well, I have many, many experiences with people who keep a wide range of sizes, hoping to get back into that, you know, size 2. I think the example I use in the book is the cheerleader skirt.
Yeah, you write, I love this quote. You say, stuff has no emotion, so stop assigning meaning to it.
Yes, and we often do that. And I think that, you know, there are a couple of ways to get through that. I mean, you can take a picture, certainly, of that and pass the dress on maybe to a to your favorite niece and, you know, keep the tradition alive if you must, especially where, you know, heirloom and nostalgic items are concerned. But, you know, love letters from a past love that you broke up with that has really no meaning for you anymore could probably be let go. But our emotions often prevent us from doing that because you feel like you're throwing the person away sometimes when you're throwing away an object, which really can't be true if you think about it.
Yeah, I talked to somebody recently who started scanning all those sorts of documents and old love letters and things so that they're accessible if you absolutely want to look at them again, but you don't have to hold the physical copy.
You don't. I mean, and you might ask yourself, you know, a series of questions. You know, when is the last time I looked at this? What does it mean to me to look at this? How does it make me feel? When might I look at it again? And really, can I let this go and move on? And those are the questions that we often don't answer. Those are questions that are often procrastinated because it takes a little bit of effort to kind of work through that emotion.
Yeah, and when you talk about emotion, a lot of people end up with things that they don't need, certainly don't want, but they feel guilty about getting rid of them because they were a gift or they came from a relative or friend. Is there a good way to sort of get over that?
I like the idea of giving things to people that they're going to use to begin with. So when you're buying a gift or receiving a gift, and certainly you can't account for somebody giving you something you really don't need. But I recently had a child, and I found that throughout my maternity and throughout, you know, my pregnancy, certainly, that many people were giving me many, many different kinds of things. And a friend of mine just called yesterday and said, I'm sending you a shoebox, and I don't need these shoes anymore for my child. Your child might need the shoes, but if they don't, pay it forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the idea of kind of moving things on. And the analogy of a child who grows so rapidly, who uses things, you know, briefly, moving it on to someone who could use it. And I think that there's a value in that. And I certainly think the idea of reusing, recycling, and repurposing comes into play a lot. And I think that that can make you feel better and less disrespectful than perhaps returning that vase that your aunt gave you that you know does not go with your rooms at all.
Well, and I do love the idea of giving someone permission. You know, you don't have to tell me about it, but if you can't use it, just do with it what you will.
Well, the whole idea of the gift receipt, I think, gives you a little bit of guilt absolution that someone gave you the gift receipt and says, there's a gift receipt here just in case.
They recognize it might not be exactly what you need.
Exactly right. And, you know, there is a lot of pressure to give gifts, I think, and find the right gift, especially for, you know, good long friends that you've had for years and years. I think a lot of us come up with the, I don't know what to get this person now.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of other things you can do. I was just quoted in a friend's article. A friend of mine is a writer, and she said, I need some good ideas for holiday giving, especially this year, where, you know, you don't want to spend a lot of money, perhaps, but you do want to recognize it. And I recommended that, you know, you give a tree. AmericanForests.org, for example, is a great way. You plant a tree. So there are those kinds of, like, renewable resource gifts that I think are really clever and a great way to not clutter somebody's house.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Mary Carla Magno is my guest. She founded a company called Order, which specializes in helping people control clutter. Her new book is called Secrets of Simplicity, Learning to Live Better with Less. Let's speak to Richard in Dallas. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Thanks for having the show on today. It's so interesting. I hope this comment that I'm comment/question that I'm making isn't too far along in the conversation. You have to forgive me. I just heard you guys on the radio.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Okay. Well, this is just strange because I'm actually going to my mother's house tonight. My plan is to go and kind of have like an intervention kind of talk with her because I went to her house not too long ago without her knowing about it, and her house is just, it's gotten really, really bad, and she lives by herself. She lives for her grandkids, basically. She's divorced. She's been divorced for years now, and I think she's depressed. She's gained weight, and she's got clutter all over her house. I mean, just it looks like a bomb went off inside of her house, and she's just got everything everywhere, no organization whatsoever. And I guess what I'm calling for is to kind of ask, how should I approach that? Because I've never dealt with anyone like that, or I've never dealt with a situation like that. How do I approach that tonight when I go and speak to her without it becoming a negative scenario and her basically, you know, feeling really bad about it? I'll take my comment off the air.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Richard.
Thank you.
Well, I think the key there is, you know, and any time you're dealing with a situation with stuff and people, and we can reflect a little bit on the conversation we are talking through about emotion and stuff, is to not be placing blame, not to say, you know, how could you have let this go? That's the kind of language you don't want to use. You want to perhaps say, well, you know, you really could use some help here. How can I help you get things a bit more organized? Very constructive, non-subjective conversation is the way to go. I know people who have given gifts of organizers to relatives and family, but it's a hard thing to do because the person really needs to be ready. And you touched a little bit on one of the key things about clutter and disorganization, which is depression. Oftentimes, clutter left to build up around you can cause depression and anxiety. And it's the procrastination of not dealing with it. And what it sounds like from your situation is that this is a large project that probably your mom doesn't feel like she can handle alone or might not even recognize it as a problem. So I think talking with her immediately to figure out how she feels about it and if she recognizes it as a problem is the key to begin with. And that's really where I start with all of my clients is that, is this clutter getting in your way? You know, and some questions to ask, too, are, you know, when is the last time you had somebody over the home? Because oftentimes what happens with clutter is that it builds up and builds up and builds up, and the people who are cluttering don't realize they're doing it. So I think you really need to start at ground one with her and ask her some questions to kind of take her temperature and see how she feels instead of, you know, jumping in and saying, hey, let's start throwing everything out, which is, you know, an approach you don't want to take, especially to someone who is holding so many things close.
It's fascinating to me to think about you as a professional helping people get organized, because I know a lot of organized people and everybody has sort of a different system. Do you ever walk away from a client and think, well, I suppose they're happy, but I think they did it all wrong?
not too often. You know, my approach is that it is a personalized thing. It's not a one-size-fits-all. So I don't really have a system that I can use for everybody that I go and visit. What I like to do is find the motivation behind why people are accumulating the things they're accumulating. The example of the person who has a size 2 through 14 in their closet. The issue is not fashion there. The issue is diet and exercise and finding a comfortable weight for yourself. Perhaps that person's naturally a 12, you know. So there's those kinds of things that you think about because it's not really the clothes there. It's the issue behind it.
And letting go of the golden 2 weeks in 1992 when the
exactly
size 2
right.
fit. Right.
The cheerleader skirt maybe needs to be packed away at that point. But, you know, you look at, you know, it's really never about the stuff, mm-hmm. I guess is really what I'm saying. And each person has their own unique approach to it. And I know lots of people are organized and organized in a different way, you know.
You write about your dad in the book, and this is really interesting because he is a guy who hangs on to things over the years, but it sounds like he's got a system for determining what really matters, and therefore it's important enough to him to keep it, and what to let go of.
Well, he keeps a lot of things, mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a push and pull with him, too, but a lot of the things that he keeps are of value, certainly, but he's extremely meticulously organized, so I guess I'd say he's an organized hoarder, which is an oxymoron, I would suppose. But, he definitely kept a lot of things that mattered as well as things that don't, but he always had a paper trail. And he is a Depression-era person, so that definitely is somebody I see in my client business a lot. Most people who hoard are less meticulous and less organized. He's just somebody who wanted to keep everything. But we found some really interesting things that he's kept, as well as some really crazy things that he's kept. For example, you know, electric bills from, you know, the early 70s.
Well, you read about, you found an old Consumer Reports and found how many fewer items there were.
I can't believe they stayed in business in about 1967 or something. There were, you know, three products. I said, is this going to be a Consumer Reports about horses? Like, what would be in here, you know? So it was really interesting to see. That's just one of the things he kept. He was very into information. So I think the Internet is a mind blower for him, you know.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Mark in Fort Worth. Hey, Mark.
Hey there. First of all, I'd like to give a shout-out to my wife, Stacy, who called me and said, you have to turn on Think because they're talking about you.
Thank you, Stacy. We love the word-of-mouth business.
Yeah, thanks, Stacy. My question is, I've got a collection of radios, from pretty good size, big ones with phonographs to smaller ones, and I finally decided, you know what, these need to move along. Well, I finally got them out of the garage, and there they have been sitting now for a couple of months or so. I don't want to just give them away, you know, because I know they're worth quite a bit. What would you suggest?
I definitely think you can call your local antique dealer, certainly do an eBay search, see if there is any value to them. Value is an interesting thing when it comes to antiques and things of nostalgia, because they're really only worth as much as what someone's going to give you the money for. So in other words, you could have something that, if somebody will give you $50 for it, then it's worth $50. You know, there's that kind of mentality. I think you've got to do a little bit of research on it, and maybe don't get rid of all of them. Maybe you select one or two to keep. I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater philosophy of organizing. If there is something there that resonates with you that you want, keep one or two. Don't keep 20. So I think you might want to ask yourself those kinds of questions. But certainly do the research. eBay, I think, is a really great way because you can see what things are selling for, and you can find out if things have sold.
You also have some great ideas for, so many people deal with this, they have a parent or a grandparent die and are left with the estate, essentially, and then feel so guilty about getting rid of grandma's china or furniture, or in the book it's a lamp that nobody wanted.
The stick lamp, yes. Well, I think, you know, you pick something that represents that person, and, you know, you pick a few items rather than keeping the whole house and moving it into your house. And often what I find with families is that there are lots of relatives that never really receive anything. So maybe spreading the wealth around a little bit and, you know, seeing what certain people have the most meaning for. In other words, you know, the china might have been especially memorable for one part of the family, or a certain hat or a brooch or something like that, and really spreading it around the family. And then, you know, you might have to encounter an estate sale, and maybe you take that money and put it in the person's name and donate it to he or she's favorite charity. So there are things like that, but I think it would be rather impractical, you know, especially if a large estate is left, to move that all into your own home. I mean, being a city dweller, it would be an impracticality for me in a small apartment. So I think you have to really make those decisions and really find the thing that best represents the person.
An email from Andy says, while I am not a collector or a hoarder in other areas of my life, as the mother of two small children, I find it very difficult to throw away pictures of my children, even the terrible shots. Any advice on how to break this emotional connection?
Well, I think in the age of digital, just to be more selective in what you print, certainly, and you can keep a lot of them digitally and not keep the hard copy of them. What I tell most mothers and fathers as they're raising their children is to be select and keep a memory box, and get a nice photo album and really select the best to put in there. But it really begins with maybe not printing them all at the beginning. Now that you have them, it certainly is quite hard to certainly throw a picture away. But if it makes you feel any better, put them in a photo album and put the less perfect shots behind the perfect shot.
Oh, so you own them, but yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't have to deal with them.
Just less clutter.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Mary Carla Magno is my guest. Let's go next to Weatherford and speak with Ken. Hey, Ken.
Hey. Yeah, your last two callers, I mean, if my wife had been listening to this program, she would have called me also. Mm-hmm. With me, it's just things in general, but I have organized piles, and I know that I do that, and in spite of my best efforts, I'll clean something up, and then before a week passes, a simple example, the bar between the living room and the kitchen. I'll clean it off, and I can guarantee you before the week is over, I've got papers and magazines and what have you stacked on that bar. But yeah, and I live my life like that. Does that mean that I am beyond redemption, or is there a way to maybe correct that?
I would say you're not beyond redemption, certainly not. The fact that you called at all says that you're not beyond redemption. You have to look at where you're putting those items. Are you simply moving them around the house, or are you actually dealing with what each item is? So that's the
funny
first thing I would ask.
Funny that you should mention that. We have a room that has been pretty much designated, okay, this is where you can put all your stuff. And I am slowly but surely moving it towards that room, but I haven't gotten it all there. And we've been in the house. The house was built 11 years ago, and we've been in it 11 years.
Well, we're talking, you know, a little bit about decision-making here, and what I see as your piles are what really what they are delayed decisions. And now you've created a whole room for your delayed decisions. So what instead needs to happen is less moving them around and really sitting with maybe five or six of those pieces of paper today and saying, what are they? Is this a bill that I need to act on? Is this something that should be filed with my archival tax information? Is this a photo that needs to go into a photo album? Is this a letter that I need to answer? You know, things like that. What are the actions that need to be taken rather than the actual organizing of it? So I think moving it around the house might be taking some of your time.
And then it just gets harder later on the farther you get from the decision-making point.
Exactly, because now you're burying it.
Yeah.
And what happens is as you're building these piles, you're building anxiety about the pile. So now you're not even dealing with the pile, you're dealing with the anxiety over the pile. We want to get back to dealing with the task at hand.
Mary Carla Magno is my guest. She's the author and founder of Order, a company that specializes in clutter control. Her new book is called Secrets of Simplicity: Learn to Live Better with Less. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses beginning in January. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Mary Carla Magno. She has founded an organization called Order, which specializes in clutter control. Her new book is called Secrets of Simplicity: Learning to Live Better with Less. Our email address is think@kera.org, and that's where we hear from Wes. He says, when there are 10 ways to do something and you do it differently each time, you only complicate arriving at the desired result. Please talk about how understanding process in whatever you do makes decisions easier. And once you make a decision, you have to stick with it unless there's a compelling reason to reevaluate.
That's an interesting approach, Wes. Thank you for that email. I think the idea of process is something that, again, is very personal. And I think you need to address what your needs are first when you go into any process. So while I wouldn't advocate repeating, you know, the same process over and over again to get the similar result, it was that Albert Einstein quote that I adore, I think that if you evaluate what your needs are going in and what your motives are behind doing certain things, and I'll give you a good example is, you know, where you place your coats and your keys in your home. And I often find that if you have a place that's four keys and four coats, that you use it over and over again without fail, you'll be able to find your coats and your keys when you're ready to leave the home. If you come into your home and throw your keys on a table, on a chair, on a sofa, and your coat is in your child's room or in the mud room, you are going to be having to look for those things constantly as you're getting ready to go out the door. So the idea of repetition and keeping things consistent is something that I would certainly agree with.
Yeah, and I think he was writing, he identified himself as a healthcare architect. He was writing about the fact that having so many choices can suffocate the process of making creative progress, because every time you consider another way something could be done, you sort of hold everything up.
Well, while you certainly want to be open to new ideas, and especially in the creative process, there's often times where something good is something good, and you should just stick with it. And it should be something that intuitively makes sense to you. And I guess the phrase of when you know, comes into play here a little bit, is that sometimes things over time, if you keep practicing them, really begin to resonate with you.
Let's go next to Lake Texoma and speak to Andrea. Hi, Andrea.
Hi. I appreciate your show. We're frequent listeners up here.
Oh, thank you.
I was very excited about stumbling on the show at lunch, as I usually do, because I've spent the last 12 months successfully clearing a lot of clutter out of my life. But as I listen, I'm excited, but I'm tugged inside by the notion that in an effort to do this decluttering in the way that I've been listening to you talk about it, we risk kind of sterilizing our environment so that we don't leave anything, any culture for our kids, i.e. the Dallas Morning News edition of 9/11 that I keep for my son one day to read, because he has, we'll have no idea of how that came about, or the Time magazine that announced we've elected a black man president.
Sure.
Those are things that are pretty significant to keep around for our culture, for our children. I just wonder how, if you ever take that into consideration when you talk about the emotional attachment people have to things.
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, I've kept all of the Obama headlines throughout, you know, the entire exciting election, because they were, you know, landmark. And for someone who lived through 9/11, I can certainly empathize with your need to keep that. I certainly have kept my magazines and newspapers from that tragic day. So, yes, there is a balance there for sure, and that's what you're touching on beautifully, is that there has to be a balance. You don't throw everything away, and I would never advocate that, especially something that has a lot of meaning for you and a lot of resonance. But what I would offer to you is find a place for those things, whether it's a memory box or, you know, a drawer, some place where those things can really be treasured and valued. What often happens is that, you know, that newspaper or that magazine gets thrown into some things that are not quite as meaningful, and then you have the clutter. So I would say that to truly appreciate and value those items that you want to keep is to find a place for them and treat them as the treasure that you think they are.
I'm struck by how many people have called today and indicated that the issue of clutter is an issue in their relationship. I wonder how often this is something that comes up with your clients, and how one person may be very happy with controlled clutter and another person can't stand it, and how that sort of plays into the dynamic between people having to share space.
Well, it's a huge issue, and it's hard for me at times, because I will often turn a client down when a spouse will call for me to fix their spouse. Can you come in and fix my husband's office? And that's really not something that can happen. And clutter can get in the way of relationships, and oftentimes it does. But again, most of the time, it's not about the stuff. It could be a reluctance for someone to clean up something, and it's starting to cause a rift in the relationship. So I think what you have to do there is really, you know, make sure that you're dealing with the issues behind the stuff. Certainly, if you have one sloppy spouse and one not-so-sloppy spouse, there's a need for discussion. And with any relationship and any cohabitation, you need compromise. And together, you need to find a way to make the house work for you. And it can't be a complete imbalance. And balance comes into that in terms of the relationship as well.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Lisa in Coppell. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
I started working from home about a year and a half ago, and I'm a meetings consultant, so I have both my home mail and my now work mail that's sent to my home. And I've gotten to the point now where I don't even want to go out and get my mail, because I get unsolicited brochures from hotels. I get all kinds of mail, and I don't know if I'm going to need it. I don't know what to do with it, and I've actually got plastic bins in my house that are just full of mail, and I'm overwhelmed with it, and I need some guidance on what to do.
Okay, this is a great question. I have a home office as well, and I understand completely what you're saying. There's a couple different ways to go about this. I mean, some people will have a P.O. box for their business. You know, specifically that everything going to that P.O. box is for your business. You know, that causes you another trip to the post office, which may be not a convenient thing for you, but it certainly separates it out from the beginning. and that sorting and constantly resorting may be causing you a bit more anxiety if you don't want to go to the mailbox because you know you're going to have to sort. It sounds like you're already starting a sorting process by having plastic bins at home to put, you know, personal and office in there. I really think sometimes it can start at the root, and what I tell most people about mail are a couple of key things, which are sorted every day. Immediately throw out, you know, personally you might be able to make these decisions a bit easier, things that you know you're not going to need, and to sort over the trash can and to have a very good shredder. Those are kind of the keys of mail. However, personally and perhaps professionally you can do this too, opt out as much as you can, as many things as you can, and that goes for email and snail mail. So you really cut it at the source. It sounds like you're in the position of exploring your new job, so you're not sure what you're going to need. So give yourself a little bit of time, and if you're finding that you're getting brochures that have not been looked at in several months or newsletters that have not been read in several months, it's time to stop those completely and sign up for them again when you have the need.
Yeah, it's also liberating to recognize that you're under no obligation to read mail that you're pretty sure is junk mail. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have an email from Matt in Dallas who says, people should be aware of a manufacturing trick that's been around for over 50 years, planned obsolescence and perceived obsolescence. These tricks not only help perpetuate addictive consumerism and the outdated economic structure we live in, but they also contribute to global environmental destruction.
I love this comment because I believe that that's very true. I think that's why, you know, the growth of recycling hopefully will continue to grow, and places like Staples that'll take back a cell phone or a battery. And I think it's a valid point. It's something that's increasing in our society very much. So I definitely agree with that, which is, again, why as a consumer, if you still have that digital camera that works and it's perfectly good, keep using it instead of upgrading it.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Paul in Dallas. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. I missed your earlier part of your program, so I apologize if you're repeating. But, you know, my wife and I have made several attempts over the years to try to declutter our house. We're in a relatively small house with three kids. And for issues we run into are just finding the time to do it and figuring out and just not being able to get all the way through the process. What process do you recommend for your clients who are trying to kind of clear out a lot of crud that's in their house and get them, get it cleared out?
So you mean where do you start?
Yeah.
Well, the key is to start and to not think, try not to think about it too much. Don't think about failing. Think about starting, because what happens too is that you have this feeling that you're never going to get through it. It's way too big. If you can divide it down into smaller tasks and do a little bit each day, you will find that you're making progress. Small goals will lead to larger goals. What happens is it becomes too much of a daunting project, and you feel that you'll fail. So what oftentimes will happen, people will just throw their hands in the air and say, forget it. I'm never going to get through it. The key is to start, and is not to start next Tuesday. Start tonight on a drawer and get through that. Maybe your checkbook. Maybe, you can start with the mail. You know, pick a small thing that maybe you can do for 15 minutes. I mean, we really can tolerate most things for 15 minutes. And maybe take 15 minutes a day. And by next week, see if perhaps, you know, you did two drawers. And take it really slow and just keep it going. You did not get disorganized overnight. And you're not going to get organized overnight. Give yourself that break and start managing the tasks and not the anxiety behind them.
What do you do with those little leftovers, whether it's a drawer or a cabinet or a room? There are always a few things that sort of defy categorization. What do you recommend we do with those if we literally don't know what to do with them right away?
If they don't fit?
If they don't fit, or if they somehow just, yeah, they don't go into one of the five bins. Yeah.
Yeah. I always have kind of like the little to-be-filed, the things that kind of defy category, and put them in one central place and revisit them. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's something that you're not going to use? Is it something you can pass on to somebody? Is it something that's pure garbage? Just revisit them over time. And if you have a need to use them and you haven't used them, start thinking about whether you need to keep them.
Can you talk for a minute, and we haven't gotten too much into this, but in the book there's a great section about cluttered time, because you find that people accept a lot of sort of engagements that really do very little to affect the quality of their lives in a good way.
Oh, absolutely. I had a colleague I worked with who used to set up his, you know, social calendar weeks and weeks in advance. And Monday he'd look at his calendar and say, I don't want to do that. Why did I schedule that? And he would spend the entire afternoon canceling. And it was a good lesson because he probably shouldn't have made the engagements to begin with. And I think that we have that intention in that, you know, we oftentimes, you know, and this is going to sound perhaps a little harsh, but we oftentimes keep relationships around that are past, you know, their due as well. And I think what you need to do is really look at how you're spending your time and the value of your time, and time is a commodity, instead of cluttering your calendar with things that have lost meaning for you. Start thinking about the things that have meaning for you and make those a priority.
You set open hours, essentially, for technology like cell phone and BlackBerry, which I think is a brilliant idea. You are only available on your phone in certain blocks of time.
Right. And I think that you can be as available as you choose to be. If you want to be available all of the time and be interrupted all of the time, then you're going to be interrupted all of the time. If, you know, there's a certain time of day where you can talk and return phone calls, you should do that. Perhaps 4 to 5, you catch up on the phone calls of the day. You know, whatever works for you. Again, it's a personalized thing. But you are as available as you make yourself. And you are in control of your own time. You set your own schedule. Certainly in a work environment, you know, you need to be, especially if you're working in a client business or something like that, you need to be on hand for your client and things like that. But really for your own personal time, you set your own schedule, you set your own agenda, and I think that we need to take control a little bit more and still be able to achieve the things we need to achieve.
And I have to imagine your friends get trained after a while to know that they can only call Mary from, you know, 6 to 8 on a Thursday or something.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, again, it's you don't have to do it that way. You can change it, and it's really what works for you, and that's really the idea of personalization, and that goes back to really being more introspective and finding out what your needs are. It might not work for everybody.
And how often do you perform status checks on your own life and on your own clutter? Is it still something that creeps up on you, or you have it down to a science now?
I kind of do the, you know, the cross check, you know, you do, and the airline, they have the cross check, everything okay. And I constantly sweep, for me, because I have home and office in the same place, I do a sweep, mm-hmm. you know, a couple of times a day. And by that I mean putting things back that need to be put back. Because clutter gets built up when things don't belong where they're supposed to belong. So if you have set a place for things to belong and constantly put them back there, it becomes much easier and there's less digging out at the end of the day.
Mary Carlomagno is founder of Order, a company that specializes in clutter control. You can find them online at order.com. Her new book is called Secrets of Simplicity, Learning to Live Better with Less. Mary, it's been really interesting. Thanks so much for spending the hour with us.
Chris, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.